Welcome to Coast Community Radio's broadcast of highlights from the American Association of University Women's Candidates Forum, held at Clatsop Community College on Thursday, May 9th. In tonight's broadcast, we'll hear from candidates for the Port of Astoria Commission. Due to time constraints, this broadcast will not include the candidates for the Clatsop County Health Center District. Now we open the forum as moderator Patricia Garner introduces the Port Commission candidates.
Tonight we have the honor of hearing from candidates for positions on the Port Commission. The Port candidates include Lawrence Fund and James Campbell for position 1, Stephen Fulton, Gil Gramson, and David Mackey for position 2, Joe Hubble, who is appearing for Rick Gertla, who apparently has been called out of town, Brad Smithart, and Mark Mead for position 5. Our candidates will make a 2-minute opening statement. We've asked them to address the following in their opening statements. 1, the most important asset you bring to the Port Commission. And 2, the number one priority you believe that the Port Commission needs to tackle.
Good evening. My name is James Campbell. Lived in Astoria for 58 years. I've in the past served on the Port Commission for 12 and a half years. 1965 to 77. During that time, we had a very successful port, a rebuilding project that most of which was built out of revenues generated from a bond issue we had laying there, and we fixed one of the docks and got it going, and out of revenues, we managed to fix the entire port up and get it into serviceable condition. We retired the bond issue in half the time out of revenues. And at the end of 5 years after we had changed management, we were able to have $2 million in revenues laying in the bank to operate on. We did a pretty good job rejuvenating the port. It was somewhat like it is right now. The only thing is that we didn't have quite as much red ink then as they've got now. Most important asset that I bring is my past experience on the port, my business. I operate my own towing and marine construction business. I've run it successfully for 30 years. I know quite a bit about construction and what needs to be done at the port facilities to get them back in service. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Larry Fund. I'm current port commissioner, been there 12 years. Who I am, I'm a lifetime resident here. I like to say that Mom grew up in Olney and Dad grew up in Napa. They got married and moved out west to Gearhart. So this is home to me. I spent my life, early part of my life, logging, fishing, heavy equipment repair, machining, welding, that nature. I think that gives me a fair grasp of just the world of heavy trade as well as what's going on with shipping and rail and the different ways that we move freight. It's been a challenging time here at the port in that we are in recession. You know, when we made the move to get hold of Tongue Point, it was coincidentally the same day that the stock market took that tremendous dip. In spite of that, we've seen positive things and we've been able to stay pretty close above board. What I want to bring here and what has always been my goal are well-paying jobs. That was the motive to picking up Tongue Point. So just to let you know where my heart's at, it's all about trying to create jobs for our children and boost our local economy.
Good evening. I am Gil Gramson. A little bit about my background. I'm a lifelong resident of Clatsop County, growing up in Warrenton. I'm a graduate of Oregon State University in science education. I spent 5 years as a teacher and 3 of them right here in Astoria Public Schools. Then I went to the Astoria Parks and Recreation, or city, as a Parks Recreation Director. Spent 8 years there, and then 25 years as city manager, and also then in later years was on the City Commission. 6 of those years as a mayor. Presently, I'm semi-retired, but I have a small construction company. We build roads, put in water, sewer lines, called Sand Ridge Construction. This commission needs a new perspective with their leaders working together, and I think that's what I can help bring about. I have worked with local, state, and federal staff and elected officials on issues relating to the dredging, economic development, infrastructure, dikes, wetlands, and land use laws. And with that, I'm going to quit before you come over and hit me.
Good evening. My name is Dave Mackey. Well, I'm a native Astorian. My main priority is the infrastructure of the Port of Astoria. You people are the foundation for the port. The people at the port just put it together. You're the people who port commissioners answer to. And it's very important that you people attend. A lot of you people wouldn't be sitting here if you would attend the meetings. They're an important thing in this community, just like the meetings for the county and for the city. My second priority is making Tongue Point a functional operation. It's limping along. It's doing a little bit here. And without any money, the port needs to buy that. And that's after paying for the infrastructure that the port doesn't have any money for right now. It's a can be a more well-run port. Of course, everything can be more well-run. I'm talking from the port commission up to our federal government. I've seen the port go through the big times, and I've seen it go through the lean times, and it's doing much better now. There's a cruise ship in, and there's a log ship being loaded now. We have all the opportunity in the world to make it even better. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Steve Fulton. I'm running for position number 2 at the Port of Astoria, and I'm going to start with my goals for the new Port Commission. The main issue the port's facing is financial. We should establish our relationship with Business Oregon, service the port's current debt, and explore refinancing options on our existing debt. We should build our cash reserves, but still maintain the docks facilities. And the way to accomplish this, the commission should do what it can to help Westerland decrease the time between their log vessel rotation. The port realizes about $100,000 every time a ship calls at the Port of Astoria. Times 15 to 20 ships a year, you can see why this is the path to financial stability for the port. And that's my goal for the Port of Astoria. As an asset, I bring to the Port of Astoria my experience in transportation and regulatory industries. My background includes marine cargo operations, transportation, and foreign trade. I was a superintendent for a stevedore company which handled general cargo and logs, so I have experience handling the port's number one export commodity. At Warrenton Fiber and consulting for the Warrenton Levee Project, I have gained understanding of land use regulation, dredge and wetland permitting, and how to protect our valuable wetland. But my biggest asset that I bring to the Port of Astoria and the Commission is my cell phone. On a daily basis, I work with the agencies. I daily contact government officials to solve problems and interact with the Army Corps of Engineers and Division and State Lands. I understand the process and how to get the projects done. These are the same issues the Port of Astoria is facing on a daily basis. Amongst the candidates for position 2, I'm sure you'll see I have a unique skill set that matches the Port of Astoria's business. Thank you very much.
My name is Mark Mead. I'm running for Port Commissioner number 5. I'm married and got 3 grown children. I've lived in Clatsop County since 1984. My family's been in Oregon for many generations. I'm the owner of Mead Engineering. I provide design and inspection services for the local area, doing small commercial buildings, residential projects, and I've got a large understanding of building codes and working with state, federal, local agencies for permits and approvals of projects. I'm also co-owner with my oldest son, Russell, of Cascade Yacht Works. We provide design and installation of systems for commercial fishing boats and yachts. I have a professional engineer's license along with a geotech license, land surveying licenses, building code licenses, and other certifications. I have a vast knowledge of building codes, construction standards, construction methods, and ADA accessibility requirements. In the mid-1980s, I was city engineer for the city of Seaside, and I worked on the revitalization of the downtown core area, replaced miles of sewer lines, water lines. We didn't have much budget at the time, but we were able to do some creative financing, creative budget work, and get the jobs done. In the early 1980s, I was assistant airport manager of the Coos Bay North Bend Airport, which is the same airport as the Astoria Airport. So I'm familiar with airports and what it takes to get those done.
Hi, I'm Brad Smithart from the Astoria Riverwalk Hotel. I actually, it's the old Red Lion Hotel. Since opening the hotel last year, we've been open a year and a month. I've increased 24 family wage jobs, 4 management positions, and I also was able to keep all my employees full-time through the winter. How did I do this? I went out and looked for other business outside of Astoria. I went to Portland, I went to Salem. I drove up and down the coast. I went and got my hands dirty. The reason why I want to be on the Port Commission is I want to open the communication to the county and to the city. There's untapped funds there. We communicate currently through the Daily Astorian, and that's not how we should communicate. We should pick up the phone. We should be at each other's meetings. I love this attendance. I've gone through the process with the port. I love the port. I love the staff. But it takes time, and we need people there that understand that we need to speed up the process. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Joe Hubble, and I'm here speaking for Rick Girdla. Rick would have been here this evening. He's sorry he's not, but he got called out to a consulting job in the Bay Area. Rick has a successful business. He's the owner of P&R Marine Support Services. This is a counseling and brokering business, primarily in the barge and tug industry. Rick's 61 years old. He's a resident of Astoria and married. His wife, Paula, is the business manager at Crest. Rick is a fourth-generation resident of Clatsop County. His father, Gordon, was an employee of Crown Zellerbach Corporation and was required to move quite a bit around the country, and this sparked Rick's interest in transportation. Rick graduated from Louisiana State University in Baton Rouge with a BS degree in industrial management and technology. Here are some of the key qualifications that Rick listed on his resume when he applied for and was considered for, a year ago, the manager of the Port of Astoria. Large-scale project planning and execution, vendor and subcontractor supervision, budgeting and financial analysis, regulatory agency relations and negotiations, public and community relations, project troubleshooting and problem solving. I'll stop there, I just got a yellow card, so I'll go on. I believe you'll agree this partial list can be backed up easy by his qualifications of what his work experience has been. I've got a copy of his resume if anybody would like to look at it. Rick brings no preconceived agenda to it. He wants to evaluate all segments of the port's current business, and especially Tongue Point. He feels that Tongue Point has fallen short of the county expectations. Thank you.
You're listening to the AAUW Candidates Forum for the Port of Astoria Commission here on 91.9 KMUN Astoria and 89.5 KTCB Tillamook Coast Community Radio.
All right, I'm going to pick Stephen Fulton to answer this question first. There have been so many backdoor deals, good old boy politics, secret meetings, and underhandedness for quite a while at the Port of Astoria. How will you do away with these practices and have clarity and openness with the public?
This is Steve Fulton, and that's a very interesting and pointed question. I think the answer is in the public itself. I've attended a lot of port meetings. I'm a member of the budget committee at the port because I wanted to know what was going on at the Port of Astoria. And when I look around the room, I don't see a lot of other people that have attended those meetings on a regular basis. If you want to find out what's going on at the port, come to our meetings and listen to the commission and listen to the discussion, and you'll have a very good idea of why the commissioners are making their decisions. Thank you very much.
I'm Mark Mead. I've been to a lot of different city council meetings, planning commission meetings, and one other thing is that the port commissioners just need to have their own meetings open, and they need to come in with their own decisions, not decisions made in groups off to the side and then come in and make decisions. They just need to make their independent you know, their own answers up for each thing, their own decisions up for each thing, and then have the commission meet as a group and hash out the issues and come up with answers. That makes sense. Thank you.
Brad Smithart, position 5. We have a staff, a highly trained staff at the port. We need to allow them to do what they need to do to get the job done, and then we need to vote on that. It's as simple as that. We hired the staff. The staff is there to do their job. They know what they're doing.
Well, I think I can say a little bit for Rick. To answer that specific question, it would be, and excuse my language, but he's a no bullshit person. He's his own man. He's not going to be influenced by the outside as far as somebody coming in and say, can you do this, can you do that? He has no prior agenda going into this.
Mr. Campbell, would you care to answer that question?
Yeah, I'll answer it. I agree with whoever asked the question there. In the past, there's been a lot of dealings going on that shouldn't have gone on. And some of those dealings ended up costing the port billions of dollars. That's why the port is in the condition it is today. There's some underhanded stuff that went on with the dredging thing, for example, a few years ago, and the port ended up paying dearly for it, something in the neighborhood of about $2 million all told. That's uncalled for, simply because somebody didn't want to abide by the rules. So I think transparency is going to be the word that goes along with it. When you try to beat the environmental rules and regulations, you need to play the game. You can't cheat, and that's what happened.
Larry Fun, that's an interesting question. Again, I would agree. I can say right now that I really believe that maybe there's been too many executive sessions, and I'd like to see far less of them. There are times in the business world where investors come in and they don't want their competitors to know what they're doing, so they get into a competition, so to speak, or they get, you know, somebody beats them out. So there are times that meetings and information does need to be protected. There's a lot of projects in the hopper with the port right now I would love to tell you all about, but we've signed a confidentiality agreement, and that's just business, but a lot of times it pays off and it works out. Now, I have been at the port when what Mr. Campbell just spoke of, I was there when that stuff happened, and it was horrible. And then we had a commission that didn't want to deal with it. And I sent, you know, emails to these people. I talked to them face to face. Nobody wanted to move on it. And I was finally forced to go to the newspaper to get it cleaned up. So I've seen that happen with what we might call backroom deals or secret meetings. Been there, done that, and I don't want to ever see it happen again. Thank you very much.
I'm Gil Gramson, and I believe very strongly that all port business must be conducted in a transparent public forum. And I don't think that has always happened. I sense that there's been some hidden agendas at times. Some special interests have kind of been able to work around the public meetings. And as far as executive sessions, I really don't think they are necessary, except in extreme cases. I've served on quite a few commissions, and I've been involved with executive sessions, but we always put a limit on them, and they had to be very specific. And I see very little of the port business not being open to the public for everyone to know what's going on. And that would be my priority, is make it transparent so people know what is going on at the port. They'll know anyway. We're a small community. Believe me. Yeah, everyone knows. And if you don't think so, just go ask your neighbor. Thank you.
Dave Mackey. I believe the gentleman at the end was made a quote that I already had in the paper about the BS. There's one, there's two, there's three, there's four. I can't count you, Larry. But general public that shows up at the port meetings. And I think I show up more of a regular basis than anybody for about the past 3.5-4 years. And that's a fact. It's something you have to do to keep the board, quote, honest. I remember that dredging deal, too, and that was a catastrophe. The port can be paying for that until one gentleman dies. That's all I have to say about that.
All right. As a port commissioner, what can you do to support and help current port tenants? I'm going to start with Mr. Gramson.
Well, I'll give you an example of what I did, actually, when I was the mayor in Warrenton. Electroak was in the process of having to rebuild our facilities, and at that time, the port had acquired a grant to put up a water tower. Ron Larson, it was like $400,000 grant. So I got together with Ron and said, why put up a water tower? Let's run a larger line that will serve for fire protection services, and let's do something that will benefit future tenants, not just Electro, where they need that fire service. I'm always looking for ways to collaborate with users. That's one example that I think you can take and make a case for. I believe that we have to be asking them, what do they need? What are the things that we can do? We invite them to our meetings, the port commission meetings, and let's listen to them. Let's sit down with them. Make an open door policy just to what they need. If they need improvements so they can make their business better, then let's work with them. And there are state and federal loans and grants that are available if you know where to look for them. And I have found those kind of things for many years.
Dave Mackey, again. The port has been over way too far sometimes. But they've usually handled situations really good. They work with a Coast Guard to put temporary stations down at, what is it, Pier 2, Pier 3?
Two.
To moor their vessels while they're working on the 11th Street dock. They work very hard with the Coast Guard. A lot of work. The tenants at Tongue Point, they had in some bad tenants. They're getting rid of them. They're expecting to get some more new tenants in. And I did see that vessel that was done at J&S Bulwarks. Beautiful job. Beautiful. You have to work with your tenants. You know, that's just the way the world is. But you can't give them everything in the world. It's negotiation. It's always negotiation. Thank you.
This is Steve Fulton. Yesterday at the Budget Committee meeting, it was discussed that Westerland, the log exporter, they debark their logs at their log yard in Lewis and Clark. And they run their debarker on a diesel generator. And that diesel generator uses 45 gallons an hour of diesel fuel. And that's running pretty much every day, all month long, all year long. And the problem is they don't have three-phase power out there, and it's going to cost a couple hundred thousand dollars to get that hooked up. Well, as the port, they should assist Westerland to get that hooked up and work with them to offset the cost of doing that. And it's not just for Westerland's benefit, but it would be for the benefit of the other tenants at the port, because it would allow better scheduling of bringing the trucks in there. It would allow the guarantee that those logs are going to be clean when they arrive, and it would be a much better and smoother operation for the port. And as a commissioner, I would reach out to the tenants and see what the port, with its powers, and you know, the port is not, it's a special business. It's a government entity that operates like a business, and it can reach out, and it has special powers in ORS 777 that allow it to solve problems like that for its customers. Thank you.
I'm Mark Mead. I think the port has a responsibility to, as landlords, to keep up their facilities and to keep up with the buildings and the maintenance and the improvements that need to be done on them in order to hold these tenants. If work isn't done on them and the roof's leaking and we don't repair the roof, then the tenant's going to go elsewhere. And that's a big problem, because then the port loses out on the money. We've just got to review the buildings and put together an attack plan of what's priority, what's not, and what we can afford to do and what we can do to keep the people in there. What's the minimum they need done each year? It's a big problem from different buildings I've been into, and it's something that needs to be addressed or there will be no tenants. We'll have log exports and nothing else. Canneries will shut down and fishing boats will go away. Thank you.
Brad Smithart for Position 5. We've got untapped funds out there currently. Urban renewal funds currently aren't allotted towards any port property. The reason why is the city's not willing to put an investment into the port if the port's not willing to put skin into the game. So if we, again, open the communications with the city, there are untapped funds that could revitalize a lot of the properties.
Once again, I'm Joe Hubble, and I'm speaking for Rick Girdle, and it just so happens that he and I had talked about a couple of things prior, so I feel very comfortable stating this. I think they need to honor their commitment. There were companies that built down at the port, from the seafood manufacturers to marine wholesalers and retailers. You made promises, such as possibly a boat ramp, but also you have a boat yard down there, and the newest thing I understand is they're thinking about, let's get rid of that boat yard and be able to put something else down there that can make us money. Honor your commitments. Thank you.
Mr. Campbell?
Well, I think first thing the port really has to do is take a look at their finances and take a look at where the money's coming from, sort out the losers, and start squeezing it down. Somewhere along the line, you're going to have to quit pouring red ink, and that's what they're doing right now. I'll give you a good example. The building that Taggart built on the port there, for some reason, the port decided they needed to buy that. Well, as an end result, they're paying over 8% interest on that, which totals out to about $170,000 a year. They can't refinance it till they get a certain occupancy in there. And the same with the boat yard. It's a loser. It's not making money. That's a fact. Thank you.
Well, I'm Larry Fund again. First of all, we really try to facilitate businesses to come in, and it's often our goal to see them hire, you know, and pay good wages. There's times that maybe we've reached out too far, but I look at the Electro loan where we backed them on their expansion, and you know what? That's a good company that builds a quality product, and I don't regret backing them. I just want to see us get through this recession. I can look at Pier 2, where we've got our fish processing going on. One of the things that we've done in my time is we restructured our bond, and then we paid off our bond, but those were two tax breaks that we brought to the taxpayer. So now our taxes are about 40% lower than they were, maybe even closer to 50. And now we've got this massive project on Pier 2 that could run as high as $20 million. And it's how do we fund that? And we are scrambling. We're trying to get federal help, state help, wherever it can come from. Or do we go to the voters for a bond? And I don't want to do that. So thank you.
You're listening to the AAUW Candidates Forum for the Port of Astoria Commission here on 91.9 KMUN Astoria and 89.5 KTCB Tillamook Coast Community Radio.
All right. How would caring for the environment factor into your caring for the peers and doing your job? And we're going to start with Mr. Campbell.
Well, caring for the environment's a pretty important thing nowadays. I mean, that's a sacred word, and you do have to comply with the regulations laid down. You have to go through the permit system, so that pretty well dictates what you can do with the port facility. But I'm certainly in favor of getting the structures back up and operating.
Larry Fund, I don't know of anybody, you know, personally, that wants to do business that sets out and says, I really want to destroy the environment and I'd like to take out a species or two while I'm at it. I don't know that person. I'll be honest with you. I think some of the environmental regulations can be pretty forbidding towards moving forward with business. I think common sense sometimes gets left out of the equation, but we've done well in working with people like DEQ and whatnot, and actually their advice is often very sound and very good, but it also oftentimes runs up the maintenance costs when it comes to pounding pile, what type of pile you can pound, what type of materials you can use in the water. So long as common sense is in the equation with environmentalism, I'm good with it.
Gil Gramson, and I would also have to support. I believe it's important the environment always be considered before you move ahead. And you do that by sitting down with the regulatory agencies, whether it's Division of State Lands, DEQ, or EPA, or Fish and Wildlife, or all the other alphabetical organizations, and simply say, what can we do? They will, if you take that proactive approach, they will, a lot of times, be able to help you accomplish what you want without causing any undue harm to the environment. And that's the approach that I think we need to follow at the port.
Dave Mackey, the hurdles the port or any other business has to go through with the alphabet soup is extreme. And it's good to some point, but it can also restrict what a person does. The port has now built up a good rapport with the EPA, I think those are the DEQ on their sampling of mud samples, and those have to be done on a regular basis. And if you don't pass that, you're in trouble. They'll shut you down. It's a tough situation to for the port to be in with having all this work to do and having to conform to all the quality control issues and all the EPA issues, but it has to be done. And that way it's followed correctly, according to the state and the feds. Thank you.
This is Steve Fulton. The audience probably doesn't realize this, but one of the sponsors of CREST is the Port of Astoria. And CREST has had lots of projects that have been in the news here recently about mitigation projects that they have developed, primarily for salmon impacts associated with the operation of the dams. I think the Port of Astoria should reach out to CREST and create a mitigation project where they could mitigate for their impacts. There's a oil seep going on down at the port, and there's a discussion about building a cofferdam around it and filling the shoreline there. And that would require a mitigation where the port could go to some lower value industrial property and transform it back into the estuary and utilize that ratio, which would be the ratio of 3 or 5 to 1, whatever their impact is, and create a pristine environment at another location. And I think the port should be very proactive in reaching out to CREST and doing projects with that in mind. Thank you.
I'm Mark Mead. The piers definitely need a lot of work, but we also have to be concerned about the environment. When I was in India one time, they voted at that time to have no environmental regulations, and you could see it everywhere. It was just a mess. So we need the environmental regulations in order to keep the place to where we're not a hazard for everything. And it's just something that every business has to follow in order to stay in business, and the port's no different than everyone else. They just need to follow the regulations, the environmental parts of it, and get the work done. And you just got to work with the agencies in order to complete it.
Brad Smithart, I think there's a disconnect with us and the Port of Portland. I feel that a lot of our environmental issues come from them, and there should be some sort of funding or a partnership where they're helping us. It's their pollution a lot that we're getting.
What would Rick say?
Joe Hubble. Well, Rick would probably say something to the point that he spent 2 years down in the Gulf of Mexico working on the BP oil spill, and he had a lot of dealings with the Coast Guard and the federal regulators as far as the environmental impact. He's very familiar with that. He works around it all the time, and I don't mean around it really, but with it. And with his wife being business manager of CREST, he better keep his stuff straight.
All right. We are in the 21st century, an age of social media. Many youth in Astoria don't know what the Port Commission does for the community. How will you reach out to the ever-growing youth in our community? I'm going to start with Mr. Mackey. I don't think I've chosen him to be number one on the answering list.
Well, I suppose you could start off with giving tours to the port, taking them over by Westland and see what they do. Maybe give them a real treat and let them go onto the cruise ships and let the cruise ships take care of them for a couple of hours. Maybe have somebody from the port go in and talk to them in school. A lot of us are retired, not because we want to be, but we could because we are. Maybe require part of a class to go to a port commission meeting if that were ever feasible. But of course, what kid has time to go to a port meeting at 7 o'clock in the evening, 6 o'clock? Sorry, and that's about covers it for me.
This is Steve Fulton, and one of the key cogs of the Astoria development plan was the Morosi plan and the working waterfront. And I believe the Port of Astoria can be a part of that vision. Years ago, Bumblebee Seafoods had tours of their cannery. But what people were doing when they were taking those tours is they were looking at a working operation on the port. Well, the first thing the port has to do is develop the working environment down there and have jobs, family wage jobs for our community, and then we can focus on doing those other things that come along with it that can provide an attraction for those in our community and those outside. Thank you.
I'm Mark Mead. I've actually done a little bit of this stuff already. One of the fishing boats we were working on last summer that was out at the boatyard, we brought in one of the Boy Scout troops in the area and had them tour the boat and see the repair work that was being done, and the captain of the boat explained what he did while they were in port, while they were getting repairs, what he did when he was out fishing and some other things. And they just didn't know what it was all about when they got there. They understood when they left, and I think that's something that you could bring in some school classes, talk to some of the commercial fishing boats when they're in there, and a lot of them would be glad to help with things like that. I know I've talked to Rick Kwasnick about it with his boats, and he's been willing to do things to help bring people in there and give them tours of things and show them what goes on. Thank you.
Brad Smithart. First and foremost, and I've been talking with the port about this, is a revamping of the website itself. When you do a Google search for Astoria, the port of Astoria actually pops up a lot. So a lot of people actually are viewing that before they've come to town, and then they're popping off and then going to Old Oregon. And Old Oregon's actually in the process of getting a facelift this year and next year. And second is, I do know technology. I can open an email and send emails. Google, Facebook, and all that good jazz. I'd bring the kids down and I'd walk them through it. We go to the classrooms. I actually work with Tuition Equity. So I do some off-sites teaching kids on how to get into college, how to apply for financial aid across the board. Rick?
I'm Joe Hubble. I have no idea how Rick would answer this question, but I can tell you he believes in education and he believes in our future is in our youth.
Mr. Campbell?
Well, it's pretty difficult, but to get a hands-on view of the port is pretty cramped. You know, you're just sitting here visualizing how you would show a group or have a field trip or scheduled field trips or whatever down there. You could do it, but it is rather cramped, but that's one way of doing it. It's just have the schools do their field trips down there. Look through the fence, watch them load logs, watch the people come and go off of the cruise ships or whatever.
Larry Fund. As a commissioner, one of your jobs is to be a public face for the port. I've gone to schools and gave talks and different community groups that have questions about port and port projects, and I think a commissioner, maybe that's fine. As far as the Port of Astoria donating, you know, we got a small staff that's got a lot to do, and I don't see it as being a good idea to say, all right, now we're going to start, you know, an outreach to youth. The best outreach for youth that the port does is get them a job. And that's what I think the most important thing we can do as commissioners. Yes, we can be a public face and try and reach out, but I don't see that as the port's mission.
Gil Gramson, and I believe it's extremely important that they reach out to all parts of the county, the And it's not just the youth of Astoria or the county. There's a lot of adults that don't have a clear picture of what the port does. And in fact, even if they can vote, they say support of Astoria. But it is a countywide organization. And besides the usual Facebook and the other social media, Twitter, they can do things, and they should post on their website continually what's going on at the port. It's pretty simple to post, and people will hit on those websites. It's very important that they do this. But I do believe that there should be, maybe on a quarterly basis, going out in the community. But last, there's no reason why a program, don't bring the kids down there, don't bring adults down there, go ahead and have a program out in the community with some illustrations, maybe some pictures and some other things about what they do.
You're listening to the AAUW Candidates Forum for the Port of Astoria Commission here on 91.9 KMUN Astoria and 89.5 KTCB Tillamook Coast Community Radio.
I think everyone has responded to that. Okay, this is the second to the last question. We'll start with Mr. Hubble on behalf of Mr. Girdle. What kinds of businesses or industries do you see as most feasible and desirable to attract to port property?
I have no response for that.
Mr. Smithart?
I'm wide open, actually. Brad Smithart, sorry. We've got so much real estate. Who's to say what we can put in there? Who's to say what we can't? The port's mission statement is to make family wage jobs in an environmentally safe fashion. That's what I want to do.
Mark Mead, I think the port needs to look at small businesses. I mean, that's going to be the mainstay of the area. You're not going to attract big giant businesses in. There's a lot of small businesses here right now that people don't even realize are going on. I mean, like with Cascade Yachts, we do a lot of work in the area in fishing boats. We'll come into a fishing boat, there'll be eight other little companies in there with two or three people at a boat when it's hauled out at the boatyard. There's $400,000 or $500,000 spent there in 2 months' time on one of those commercial boats, and people don't realize it. How much money goes through the community with just that? So we just need to attract more small businesses. There's more businesses that could come in for boat repair, boat maintenance. There's rule changes in 2015 with the Coast Guard that's going to make a lot of changes in the commercial boats. And there's hardly any places left in the West Coast where they can come in and the crew can help work. A lot of the boat yards, you have to use their people, that's it. And if you want to bring someone else in, you're not allowed. And that makes a big difference here. It's why the guys want to come in here. Thank you.
This is Steve Fulton, and it's kind of interesting that just yesterday I had this conversation with Mr. Mead, and I firmly agree with what he just said, that there's a tremendous value in the boatyard business for the Port of Astoria. And since we already have that infrastructure in place, I believe it's something that we can develop and improve on. But the other thing that I think we can do more to support our fishing communities. The port can also do things like improve infrastructure to help fishermen. We need a fisherman's hoist at the port, a public hoist so they can get their cargo off without having to go to the existing facilities. Things like that, small steps, are where we can go with the Port of Astoria right now, because we just don't have the money to chase after the big projects. Thank you.
Dave Mackey, the fishing hoist has been in the works for months. I think big business and small business can help to support the big business by selling equipment, by selling clothing to the employees, by selling houses to the employees. It's just a circle of what can happen. I don't know what's going to go in the Tongue Point, or what could go in the Tongue Point, because that's the only space left that we have here, large space. I worked heavy construction for my lifetime. I made a lot of money, and so did a lot of other people, and it was spent in the community. I never worked in Astoria. I had to go to work in Longview, in Portland, at North Slope, Alaska, and in Antarctica. You know, you do what you have to do. And I'd like for the port to do what they have to do to make the port a viable, strong facility. Thank you.
This is Gil Gramson, and one of the things that I know that we need to enhance what we have, and that is the fishing and the timber industry, and do what is necessary to keep those industries here. They're not dying, as some people would like to think. The cruise industry is very important. Astoria is becoming a destination town because of that kind of business. The other thing, small businesses, the 5 to 25 type employees, the port should work with them, provide space, land, and even put up the building so they can have this, what is commonly referred to as an incubator program, until they get on their feet and are able to function. That there's a lot of different ways of keeping small businesses going here, and that is what I would like to see. And I think that's the future for the Port of Astoria, small business development.
Larry Fund, one of the things you have to face at the port is you look at your land and you have to determine the highest and best use. There was the question about ship breaking, and you have to look and go, is this the highest and best use for this property? And of course I said, I don't think so. We do have land that's not water accessible, not rail accessible, like the Airport Business Park. I think we could do a better job promoting that. But you have to understand, the port isn't building businesses. We facilitate businesses. So we try to take a look at who's coming in. Are they responsible business people? Can they meet their lease requirements? But we really try to help these people. So with that being said, that's my concept of it. It's we're there to help these businesses, but we have to be smart about who we put where. Thank you.
Mr. Campbell?
One of the biggest handicaps that the Port of Astoria has is a lack of locally stimulated cargo, and that's what it takes to make the port go. We have the logs, they're locally stimulated. We have one of the biggest fishing industries in the Pacific Coast, off of our coast, Northern California and Oregon. And somehow the Port of Astoria needs to facilitate a facility where these hake fishermen can deliver their hake. They can be processed, frozen. Right now they're running probably another 500 to 600, 700 miles to deliver their catch. That takes fuel, money, and time that they could be fishing if they could come into the Columbia River with it. And I would suggest that the port get involved with a major cold storage operation and see what they could do to capture that business. It's there. All they got to do is go after it. And that would save the fishermen a lot of money. It would make money for the community. It would make jobs for the community. People wouldn't have to run to Seattle to deliver their catch. They could do it right here.
All right, we're about to have final statements, and we're gonna start with Mr. Campbell and come towards me. So, with respect to closing statements, I just have another question here. You don't necessarily have to address it, but I thought it was kind of intriguing. There have been extremes over the past 10 years in the port. What, according to you, has been the port's wisest decision, and what's been the least enlightened? But feel free to say what you'd like to have for 1.5 minutes and close. Mr. Campbell?
The wisest decision?
Wisest and least enlightened. Yeah, those are two separate different categories.
That's a good question. I think a wise decision that the port has made is to facilitate the log operation they have right now. That's what they're in business to do, is to make money, create jobs. It's been visible, highly visible, but I think it's the wisest decision they've made in a long time. Thank you.
How about a bad one?
Well, you want me to give a bad decision?
Go ahead.
Well, yeah.
Well, they're there.
Well, a bad decision. It was like, I'd like to iterate again, buying the Taggart building. That was a very bad decision. Another bad decision was the environmental violation that was made a few years back. I believe that was on your watch. If we had that $2 million back in the bank now, we'd be able to do something. Thank you.
Yeah. I said one. Larry Fund. I would agree that the environmental disaster that went on with the dredging and all the fines, I think that in my time there, that was definitely the worst of it, and it was a horrible thing. And I learned some lessons. You know what? You walk in, you mean well, you trust the people around you, and there's some bad decisions being made, but they're telling you don't pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. The only thing I could do on that was, when I realized we were off the rails, was stand up and say, we're wrong. This is off base. We've got to fix this. I alluded to it before, that was an uncomfortable spot to be in. But when I figured out what was on, I stood up and did the right thing. As far as wisest, when I started here 12 years ago, there were no deep water vessels stopping at Astoria on at least a scheduled basis. It was, that port was ghost town. And I came in saying I wanted to see the port start behaving like a port again rather than just a landlord. I wanted to see deep water trade. We are in a position now to where we're up to 40, 50 scheduled deep water stops, log ships, cruise ships, research ships, and that's going to continue to increase. And that's something that excites me, because the Port of Astoria really is back on the map again as far as being a functional port.
Gil Gramson. First, the smartest decision the port made was the log shipment and also the cruise ship. The coordination between those two activities has been really remarkable, and I'm glad to see. I saw a good example of it today at the port. The least intelligent decisions is the environmental dredging, but also the way they went out and worked with these large industrial users without knowing where the community stood. And I don't care whether it's the Alumax plant from years ago or the coal loading or the LNG, those were not smart ways of operating. I feel the Port Commission must work as a team. Yeah, there's a lot of port resources, and it needs to be used for the benefit of all our citizens. And I also strongly believe that all public business must be done in the public. It must be transparent and clear to everyone in the audience that it is an open public debate. Thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
I'd also like to say this. As a commissioner, I hope that people, and I think everybody at this table is meets that requirement. When you come to a meeting, you need to leave your ego at home, and you need to be willing to be cordial to one another, whether you agree with each other or not, and the temperament of the meetings definitely needs to change. Thank you.
Dave Mackey. What was the question again?
It's a closing statement, but yes. What's the wisest and least enlightened decision?
Like everybody else, Westerlin, cruise ships, good thing for this community. I like it when the tourists come in and they go, it's such beautiful weather here, let's move, Fred. That makes my heart feel good. I have two sons and a daughter, and they're not living here. There's nothing for them. I started, of course, that's how it was great in the old days, because I wasn't from the old days. I remember working at Bumblebee Seafood and enjoying the heck out of it. Best job I ever had at that point in time. Then I went and bought a share in Astoria Plywood Mill. That was a good idea at the time. I got out while I could, and I did well on that. So what do you do then? There's nothing for a blue-collar worker. My grandpa was a fisherman on the Columbia and came here, I think, about 1882. there has to be something to hook the kids and keep them around a little bit. There's hardly anybody out of my class of 68. Just isn't here. That's all I'd say. Thank you.
This is Steve Fulton. I agree with the majority of the commissioners here on this log export issue, but it is a good thing for the Port of Astoria, but it also demonstrates what's wrong with the Port of Astoria. I'm sure the community realizes that there was a tremendous brouhaha over how that was going to come down. It was going to impact the cruise ships. It was going to impact England Marine. It was going to cause congestion. The port didn't reach out to the community. And what I would like to do is ask the community that's here to come to these port meetings and participate in. There's our communication that we need to have with our community. But let me go on and say, I can go down the list and say there's lots of things that the port has done incorrectly. They haven't followed environmental regulations, they haven't complied with their grants, and they haven't avoided lawsuits. If they had all that money back in their coffers, things would be different. And if I'm elected commissioner, I'm going to try and keep the port out of situations like that. Thank you very much.
I'm Mark Mead. Some of their best decisions, I think, lately, have been the log exporting and the cruise ships and the intermix of them. I think that's a good mix, and it helps the community both ways. Their poor decisions of the dredging operation, that was a really poor decision, and it's cost the port a lot of money. Another decision is their lack of maintenance on the facilities. I mean, if you look at the budget to replace and repair the facilities right now, that's a huge number, and that's going to be a tough thing to take care of. But if we don't take care of it, there won't be a port left. The businesses will be gone, the port will be gone, the piers will be gone, and we just can't have that happen. We've got to do something to keep everything here. The airport always needs work. Having worked at the North Vancouver Airport, I know that one. It's a big, expensive job, but it's something that has to be taken care of. The industrial parks, they need to do something to attract people to come in there and develop them, bring businesses in. You can generate money that way to help take care of some of the other facilities. It's just, it all comes down to where the commission's got to make some good decisions and some planning and figure out where the money's got to be spent and where it's got to be stopped going out at. Thank you.
Brad Smithart, I think we all agree on that. When I started as a bellman, I didn't make a lot of money, and so I learned that on Tuesday there was a lunch, and if I served the lunch, I got to eat afterwards. And at the end of the meeting, they would all stand up and they together would say these four lines, and I got entranced with that. Before that point, I was a resident where I was living. I wasn't a citizen. I wasn't volunteering. I wasn't putting effort out there. And I said, those people, I want to be like them one day. And I'm happy to say 3 years ago or 2 years ago, I got to become a Rotarian. And I keep the card in my pocket, and my children know the mantra, they say it too. And the Rotarian four-way test of things we think, say, or do. Is it the truth? Is it fair to all concerned? Will be build goodwill and better friendships, and will be beneficial to all concerned? That's what I want to bring to the port. That's what I want to bring to this community. Thank you.
Very admirable. I'm Joe Hubble. I'm recommending Rick Girdle for the commissioner position number 5. Rick has 36 years experience in the maritime transportation and environmental services industry. His successful marine consulting and brokering business has contacts worldwide in the marine transportation sector, interfacing with trucking and rail. His experience in sales, operations, business development, and project management has already helped turn around many facets of individual companies. We need a port to be a strong work provider, not a tax burden. Thank you.
Thank you again, very much, all you candidates. Obviously, a lot of work, a lot of issues. On behalf of AEUW and Clatsop Community College, I want to thank each and every one of our participants and our audience for coming. Thank you so much. Excellent, excellent job. Thank you.